Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
That's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
This is Morning Air.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. It is Glenn and Sarah in for John today on your home for happy baby noise and some accordion music and a whole bunch more. This hour, lots of goodies on the way for you. You know, we battle that culture war all the time here on Relevant Radio. How can we wade into culture wars with love? We'll talk about that with Angela Erickson before the end of the hour. Ashley and Rona along with the very latest from Rome. And we kick off the hour. Very interesting conversation. Reminds me a hair about the past weekend, Memorial Day weekend. Sarah, one of the things that we try to do is get around to a couple cemeteries, have a large batch of family, not so much alive and around me, but that has gone before, that are in one of two different cemeteries. And so one's a small town cemetery, immaculately groomed, and you don't need to do anything but kind of walk up and pay your respects there and marvel at some of the names you find, old buddies of my father and things like that. And then the other one featuring many folks in a large city cemetery. And it's a very interesting experience, I think, to go there as well. But one of the things I've never really thought about here as we talk about Sister Wilhelmina's incorrupt body today. You might have heard about this very recently on the news as they were looking to move her body for a final resting place with the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles in Missouri, that her body was said to be incorrupt. Is that something, when you visit a cemetery, Sarah, that kind of ever crossed your mind about the state of those beneath your feet?
I'm thinking about that rhyme, you know, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, the worms play pinnacle on your snout. Not thinking about incorrupt bodies. That's just, it's always so amazing how God can work those miracles. And yeah, I mean, you just never know who's going to be the one. Sometimes it's not even the whole body, just parts of the body that could be incorrupt. I know of incorrupt tongue or this or that. It's just insane and so cool. Man, God is awesome.
Well, he certainly is. We're going to dive into that and find out more. Our first guest is Royce Hood from Peoria. He's a husband and father, a media producer, podcaster, musician, and attorney. He knows how to do just a few things, and he has been on site there working on a documentary. Royce, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Well, it's great to have you along. We'd love to have you fill us in on what appears to be some amazing happenings down in Missouri. How did you get involved in this?
Yeah, just, you know, my wife and I have a very spiritual connection to the sisters. A number of years ago, we had a child that had something called Potter syndrome, and we knew he wasn't going to survive birth, and or he wasn't going to survive long after birth. And every night, my wife would listen to the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles. They have wonderful, beautiful music that people can listen to, and it's just heavenly. And she knew there wasn't much we could do for him besides pray. His name is Fulton. And so she wanted him to know the sound of heaven. And so every single night during carrying Fulton to term, she would play the music at night and go to sleep with it. And so we did end up losing Fulton. That's a different story. But the point is, there was a spiritual connection. And so when we heard the news of Sister Wilhelmina, we felt very compelled to load up all six kids and drive 6 hours through Illinois and Missouri to this little town in the middle of nowhere to visit and to see it for ourselves. And we were just blown away and so impressed and inspired by the beauty, the tranquility, and the peace that we experienced there. And when I gazed upon Sister Wilhelmina, I felt a call to tell her story. And I didn't know yet if I would even get permission to tell her story, but I felt like, okay, I need to share not the miracle. The miracle of incorruptibility is like the sprinkle on the icing, but there's a bigger miracle with her life and legacy. And so I said a little prayer. I venerated her, and I said, you know, if it's God's will, Sister Wilhelmina, with your intercession, I'm going to share your story with the world. And I was able to meet with the Mother Abbess and explain to them what my motivation was and what I was hoping to do, and they said yes. Long story short, we went home, took all six kids home, and they gave us permission. I literally jumped in the car and came right back, and I was embedded with the sisters for about a week on the grounds, being able to document aspects of the last few days that many people will never be able to experience or see. It was just absolutely incredible.
Talk a little bit about, how long this has kind of been a thing, if you will, and how long people have really been flocking to that area now.
Yeah, we found out about it. It's funny. Yesterday, I actually had no idea even what day it was, because when you're on the grounds of a place like the Abbey, there's zero internet connection. At least for me, there wasn't. There was very little phone reception. I literally lost concept of like what day it was. But this was, I would say, it's been going on now for a couple of weeks. They discovered it because they were planning on moving her anyway for an altar area to memorialize her fourth anniversary. And then they discovered that there was a crack and so forth. So it's been going on for a couple of weeks. But when word really got out, I'd say towards the end of probably about a weekend or so ago. And it just went viral very, very quickly. And it's hard to contain a story like this. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, they really, are kind of playing it down a little bit at the Abbey. They were planning an addition of a St. Joseph shrine for quite some time. And they wanted that to include the retirement of the remains of their foundress, Sister Wilhelmina. So in preparation for the construction, they exhumed her body. And she had been buried in a simple wooden coffin without any embalming at all 4 years ago. So they just expected literally bones there. The intent was devotional to carry it out in the privacy of their cloistered life. But the discovery of what appeared to be an intact body and perfectly preserved religious habit created an unexpected twist, they said, to their plans.
That's right. Yeah, actually, and I don't know that they even intended to look at the body. The plan was to exhume the coffin and to carry that over to the new, the final resting place. And so they discovered there was some damage in the coffin, and one of the sisters peeked inside with a flashlight and discovered a foot and a sock. And the sock, should have been dissolved and disintegrated long ago, as should have the body. So yes, it was God's timing. God is interesting, and these sisters are huge, as many of us in the Catholic tradition are, on dates. Dates are really, really important. So this last weekend, being Pentecost and the anniversary of Sister Wilhelmina's death, were very significant. And so I was able to participate and sort of behind the scenes, go into some of the areas that other people weren't able to see, speak with people that most people don't get to speak with people, like such as some of the sisters. And they did just an absolutely beautiful procession with Sister Wilhelmina's body. And I just have to say, the first day we were there, there was maybe 30 or 40 pilgrims coming and going, mostly locals. A few people had driven in. This last weekend, I have no idea how many thousands, but it was 10,000 people would be my guess, over the course of a few days, just coming and going, and people from all walks of life. I witnessed a couple of conversions where people were, one woman had not been to church in over 30 years, stepped in the church and just started crying. And basically, she was home, and she knew she was home. Other people really weren't even Catholic, were coming to see, who is this? Who is this little nun? And hearing the Latin Mass in that particular instance, or hearing the Vespers where the sisters sing their prayers, was just so inspiring for so many people. So I really honestly can't wait to share this story with the world.
Well, and being that you're very in touch with the spiritual side of things and are able to, produce songs about it, Fulton's song, my goodness, to talk about, just touching in the love that surrounded that little life all along, well before he was taking a breath too. Now, talk about how that kind of maybe had God preparing you to be able to do something and tell a story like this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was actually, just before I prayed and undertook this project, I was, I'm an attorney by trade. And these days I'm sort of practicing less and less law because I'm feeling called more and more to evangelization through the media and through events and things that I produce. But anyway, I literally turned down a really big opportunity in Florida, which is where I'm from. And the afternoon that I turned it down was the afternoon I heard about Sister Wilhelmina. And so when we have faith, it's amazing how when we trust the Lord, things just happen. I'll give you another quick example of the spiritual side. The crew that I typically use for filming was not available. I had zero gear when the sister said yes, but I knew I needed to get there. So I ran to Best Buy. I grabbed whatever I could. I jumped in my car. I didn't have a drone. We wanted a drone shot to illustrate all the people and some of the aspects of just outside. And my guy wasn't available. So, Lord, if it's your will, we'll figure out the drone thing. As soon as we got to the Abbey, as soon as I arrived, the sister introduced me to the president of Benedictine College. And he said, is there anything you need? I need a drone. And he had me one there the next morning. And that's how the Lord works. I call it, there's a film producer that I'm friends with. His name is Jason Jones. And he always says the Holy Spirit action plan. And so I've sort of commandeered that from him. And people were asking me, what's your plan for this movie? Holy Spirit action plan is my plan. we're going to rely on Providence. And by the way, none of the movie will not be released without the sisters' approval. This is a project that I want them to be involved with. I want them to be, this is their project. This is bigger than me. This is about this amazing sister. And I just, it's going to be incredible.
And what a topic, what a fascinating piece of maybe history in the making here as we talk with Royce Hood today on Morning Air about the story of Sister Wilhelmina. This is from the Abbey Church in Gower, Missouri, apparently incorrupt body, buried 4 years ago. What kind of is the response of the sisters there to, what has happened or not happened to Wilhelmina's body, as well as all the attention?
That's such a great question. There's a quote that I shared on my radio show last week, and it's going to be a big part of the film because it's so powerful. We are just simple sisters. And I just want, I kind of pause when I say that because it's so simple, yet it's so profound. One of the sisters and I were trying to hook up. I was helping them. You get out there with the sisters to film, and next thing you know, you're carrying tables, you're carrying chairs, you're moving things, you're helping with altars. They put you to work, and it's not even, they don't even ask, but there's a need, and people just pitch in. It's incredible. But I was sharing with one of the sisters, sisters, you guys are kind of famous with some of this music. I mean, this is some of their albums were the Billboard Top 10. And one of the sisters said back to me, I don't know anything about that. I'm just a simple sister. And I just, that really struck me how beautiful that was. These women are contemplative. They want to live their life dedicated to the Lord. They want to pray. They want to pray for priests. They make their vestments. They've got their farm. They're just so peaceful. They're not used to the fanfare. They're not used to all of the attention. But they're also very charitable. And it's so beautiful how willing they are to share. And one of the things was, we as you mentioned, this is sort of a private thing. But then they realized this is a gift. And they couldn't, they had to share it with whoever was, wanting to come. So just incredible. And I'll let people know we're working on the title of the film. For right now, I think we're just kind of using Incorruptible Movie. I think we're going to be throwing up a website. I'm not sure if it'll be up in time for people listening now, but it should be like incorruptiblemovie.com, where people can just sign up and get information. But the other easiest way to find out about this will be via probably on social media. Just follow me, Royce Hood. Look for me on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter. And I'll be posting links when the time is right.
Well, what a project. To be in the right place at the right time for the Lord to use you. So often the Holy Spirit works that way. You had mentioned Jason Jones, and we've had occasion to talk and work with him over the years, too. And he's definitely the one that's going to rev you up and go with that the Holy Spirit battle plan for getting things done as well. And you mentioned too, kind of the humility of the sisters surrounding all of this. Now, as part of what's on their website, which is the Benedictines of St. Mary.org, but it says the relics of a person are exhumed in the ordinary course of action for the opening of a cause for sainthood, leading many to believe that such a cause has been or will be opened. They said this is not the case. We continue on with a simple reinterment of our foundress and are seeking advice on a possible opening a cause in the future, especially as sister has not yet reached the required minimum 5 years since death in order to begin. Initial statements regarding sister's extraordinary physical state have been procured, but we acknowledge further studies must be done later in an official capacity. And something like this starts at the diocesan level. It needs the approval of the bishop and all of that. As far as you know, is that something that the local bishop in the area has really taken note of yet?
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, it's typically a five-year period. And obviously the local bishop was out at the site, and but some of that information will come out in due time when it's appropriate, in terms of where that is and, you know, and what they're doing. But I just have to say it's interesting. One of the things I learned is historically, I believe incorruptibility, you know, typically you need like two miracles for the canonization process after that 5-year period. And my understanding is now, incorruptibility is no longer counts as one of those miracles. And that may have changed several hundred years ago. And so it's interesting. And I think that's because, there's incorruptibles in Europe. They're all over. People can, you know, go online and search. I think there's about 300 technically that people say we know about, but I've heard the Capuchins, it became so common. They have unmarked graves. When they bury one of their Capuchins, they would dig and oops, there's a body and oh, it's incorrupt. And they would just say a prayer, cover up the body and move on to the next spot. It's really interesting. So we're going to be looking for two other miracles for that canonization process once they start that investigation, but no formal investigation for canonization has been announced at this time.
You know, as far as the technical physical aspects of it, I imagine that might be something you will look into a little bit as far as that production. I mean, what kind of thoughts or wondering do you have regards of how physically that happens? Decay seems to be such a normal part of the process of living and dying.
Yeah, you know, God promises a resurrection. So I think, you know, it's interesting. I saw a quote on social media yesterday. And, you know, when you start, the scientist said something like, when you start, dabbling into science, it sort of takes you away from God. But the more you dig, the closer you get to God. Because there's certain things that are just unexplainable to science, and so the two go hand in hand. The church has always been great. I mean, even like going into things like exorcism, the church relies on secular science and medicine to examine, you know, potential victims and patients and so forth before going into that rite. This is the same here. The church is very mindful of that, and so I think, I have been blessed over the last week to be given just unprecedented access, I think, to some of the things that were going on at the Abbey that, again, few people will ever see. And so when the time is right, there'll be a lot more that will be revealed in terms of what the plans are and what the sisters are doing and what's happening with everything. But in terms of incorruptibility, one of the things I think that's really, really cool about this particular story is, you know, okay, maybe it's technically possible. I heard somebody say over the last weekend, if the coffin was completely airtight, it's possible a body may not decay because it's airtight, right? Sort of this environmental aspect. But this particular coffin was a, you know, handmade wood coffin that actually had a crack in it. And so my understanding is that there's air and there was even moisture that were able to get into that coffin. So it wasn't airtight, which adds to the mystery and the beauty of this grace. I think in this dark world. And what I mean by that is there's so much beauty everywhere, right? But there's so much division. There's so much, just so much tension out there. God is giving us this grace to sort of like a little candle in the darkness to sort of remind us and of God and of the promises of eternal life. And wow, again, I just have to emphasize, I know this is off the course of your question, but if you could have witnessed the people and you had some folks from Relevant Radio out there, the people that were coming from all walks of life, young, old, handicapped, believers, non-believers. There was even a few people there that were probably just, you know, I don't know, maybe a bit nefarious, but when they get there, they couldn't help but to show respect. I witnessed that with my own two eyes. It was remarkable. So God is giving us this grace, I think, to really just sort of as a wake-up call in many ways.
Royce, do you think something like this helps, for one, focus people toward the eternal a little bit? So often we try to avoid thinking and talking about death, and here it kind of is in our face in a new and different way, as well as just, you know, a sort of a physical consolation of our belief in our faith.
Yeah, that's a great question. Absolutely. I heard several priests over the weekend, you know, reiterate that same point that, look, all of us inevitably one day will die. Our physical bodies will die. And that's inevitable. It's the truth. One thing, we just can't escape it. And so look, but we're also promised eternal life and the resurrection. And so, yes, it makes it profound, because I have seen bodies that have been deceased before. I've seen, you know, dead people. I've held two children in my arms that had passed. And I can tell you that the physical changes over just a short period of time are profound. And what we have here is just, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it's like, wow, here's this body that's been 4 years, and it's just absolutely amazing. I mean, really, people can look at the pictures. It's hard to see. You can actually, people listening now, that her body has now been entombed, I guess you can say, it's behind glass, but people can go see, and they can witness for themselves and see, you know, take a look. Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. All the incorruptibles I've seen. Go ahead. Can you still hear me?
Yeah. No, I just said, come and see. We are out of time for right now, but Royce, you are such a great guest. We appreciate your time this morning and your energy and enthusiasm for this project. We wish you well with that. Blessings on getting a great film together and spreading the word. Thank you so much. And hey, once again, if you want to toss out your website or ways people can find out more about all the good things you've produced through time too.
Sure. Yeah. Most of my recent projects are at YouTube/@Royce Hood. And I would just encourage people to look for me. Look for me on Facebook, Royce Hood. We have a podcast, Truth Culture Life, POD, at Facebook. And then the movie, I believe the website for now will be incorruptiblemovie.com. You can also just look for RoyceHood.com as well.
Oh, very good, Royce. Well, hey, thanks to you, and greetings to your beautiful family as well. Keep promoting the Lord and doing those good creative things that you do. And, you know, if the lawyer stuff fades into the background, that's all right, too. But again, thank you so much for your time. We continue with the Morning Air. We're going to Rome next. Ashley Nerona joins us with the latest from the Holy City. Coming up next is Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
You're unbelievable.
Bringing Rome to home. This is Morning Air on Relevant Radio.
Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio with Glenn and Sarah, and for John today. Thank you so much for joining us. Still to come this hour, brand new story corner for you. We'll also talk a little bit about wading into the culture wars and doing it with love. Angela Erickson joins us before the hour is through. But now we head off to Rome, and I won't be attempting any Italian, because, you know, once I say spaghetti and say pizza, that about exhausts my Italian vocabulary. But joy nonetheless to talk to our Rome correspondent, Ashley Nerona. Good morning, Ashley. Great to have you along today.
Hey, Glenn, good morning to you. Now, come on, I bet you can say lasagna and ravioli too.
Very well. I certainly can. I've got no ability to roll my R's, though. But, you know, nonetheless, I do have good ability to eat all things with noodles and marinara sauce and stuff like that. So I suppose that counts for something, huh?
Yes, indeed. You're on your way.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, we always love to hear what's going on, and we love to kind of get started with that conversation by hearing what the Holy Father is up to with the weekly general audience.
Absolutely. We had a beautiful sunny day today, even though there is rain forecasted today and the clouds have rolled out. But by the grace of God, there was not a drop this morning. And the Holy Father continued his theme of apostolic zeal and what that means to the great missionaries and what that means to all of the faithful. He said today that prayer is one of the greatest characteristics of all the great missionaries. And to prove that, he looked to the example of Matteo Ricci, the venerable Matteo Ricci. He has been looking at different spiritual heroes who exemplify this. You may remember that last week he spoke about St. Andrew Kim, who's the first native priest of Korea and a martyr for the faith. Now, he dreamed of evangelizing in China, but he didn't end up making it there in his lifetime. So today, as the Pope focused on Venerable Matteo Ricci, he actually did have the opportunity to enter into China. He, of course, who was a Jesuit. And he said that the Pope said that Ricci's love for the Chinese people remains what he called an enduring source of inspiration for relations between the church and China. And a little background, Matteo Ricci was born in the Marche region right here in Italy. And as a young man, he heard the stories of great missionaries, and he asked the Jesuits to then send him to the missions in the Far East. Now, he managed to learn Chinese as well. He immersed himself in the culture there, even began to write in Chinese. And he had a real gift of being able to foster respectful dialogue. So in China, he became known and respected as a wise man and as a scholar. And the Pope noted that Ricci had a gift of making the gospel known not only in his writings, but by his example of religious life, by his example of prayer, and the way that he lived virtue. And in this way, the Pope suggested that Ricci attracted many of his Chinese disciples and friends to embrace the Catholic faith. So when Matteo Ricci died in Peking in 1610, he was 57 years old. He was actually the first foreigner who was permitted by the emperor to be buried on Chinese soil. And the Pope said that Ricci was just consumed by the labors of his mission because of that incredible dedication that he had, especially his continuous willingness to welcome visitors who sought him out any time of day or night in order to ask his advice or ministry. And the Pope, especially today, praised Venerable Matteo Ricci's strong prayer life, his strong witness to Christ, his resistance to worldliness, and his closeness to Christ through prayer, especially looking at these attributes as ways that all of us can grow closer to the Lord, and all of us can live a missionary life, preaching the gospel wherever we go.
Well, Ashley, being able to hear all of those weekly general audiences, and especially this current series on apostolic zeal, has to fire you up a little bit too. That you can't help but have that happen, huh?
Exactly. And one of the reasons I feel so blessed to have this opportunity to share on Relevant Radio every week, to share about the truth of the Lord, to share about how our faith is celebrated in different parts of the world, and hopefully to light fires in the hearts of all of our listeners to grow closer and closer to God, and to do the same in their corners of the world, to find ways to really celebrate the richness and the treasures of our faith.
Oh, amen to that. Absolutely. And what are the inspirational things that our Holy Father does? And we can recall seeing various of images of sweetness like this throughout his pontificate. But when he meets with young people who are struggling physically in a certain way, we have note that he recently met with young cancer patients from Poland.
Yes, indeed. This happened earlier this week on Monday. And these were children who were being treated at the Wrocław Oncology Clinic, as well as their families. Now, the Pope had a beautiful message for them, reminding them that Jesus is always close to them. And he greeted each child individually. He gave each child a special blessed rosary. And he reminded them that even in the moments of sickness, those most painful moments, the most difficult moments, he said, the Lord is there. And he reminded them that God loves them. He also asked a very important question of all those young children who were present. He said, do you want to be apostles of God's love in the church and in the world? He reminded these children that Jesus needs them for this witness, and that he entrusts his plans to them. And he asks, do you want to be my apostles of love? So the Pope encouraged all of them and all of us to answer yes to Christ with enthusiasm and to bring the joy of God's love to others. And he also reminded all of the youth who are suffering with cancer to think of Our Lady often, and also invited all present there that day to pray a Hail Mary together in this month of Mary Glenn.
Talking with Ashley Nerona, our correspondent in Rome, with the very latest and what the Holy Father has been up to this week, whether it be the general audience or a meeting with cancer patients. For the country as a whole, a couple big celebrations coming up this Friday. First, on the civil side of things, Italy celebrating Republic Day. What does that all entail?
Yes, Festa della Repubblica. You can practice saying that, Glenn. This is a national public holiday that we celebrate here. So that means everything is closed in Rome. And this is actually our 77th edition of this annual event. It commemorates that day back in 1946 when Italians voted in favor of a republic, when they voted against the monarchy. And at that point, the monarchy had been discredited during World War II. So this special national holiday for us begins with our president, Sergio Mattarella. He lays a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier at the Vittoriano Monument, right there in Piazza Venezia in the heart of Rome. And after the president lays that wreath, then probably the most popular and anticipated event of the day begins with an aeronautical display. The Frecce Tricolori, the special Air Force jets, fly overhead in formation around the city, emitting plumes of red, white, and green smoke, leaving that smoke behind them, the colors of the Italian flag. And after that, there's a major military parade. It goes along the Via dei Fiori Imperiali. That street is better known as the street that runs right next to the Colosseum and the Forum. So there's going to be thousands of members of Italy's army, navy, police forces, troops, military vehicles. They make their way around the Baths of Caracalla and the Colosseum and the Forum through Piazza Venezia and the Circus Maximus. It's very, very exciting moment here. And then, Glenn, as a little side note, speaking about great events happening in this city, just a couple of days ago, Rome hosted the final stage of this year's Giro d'Italia. That's the great bike race. This was actually the 106th edition of this race. It's the world's second largest bike race. And imagine that the bikers, after riding 2,165 miles, they ended in Rome. So that means, of course, as a result, there's lots of street closures and bus diversions and parking restrictions along the race route. Well, I have to tell you, Glenn, there was one particular person who was stuck in traffic who was not so happy about the race. It was a bride. Here she was sitting in stopped traffic, unable to get to her wedding in time, each minute becoming later and later to get to the Church of Santa Maria in Araceli, right there on the Capitoline Hill. Well, what happened was, thanks to a very astute police officer in the crowd, he spied her there. He saved the day, created an impromptu police escort, and got the bride to the church on time, where her happy husband-to-be was waiting there at the altar, Glenn.
Waiting there, taking a big sigh of relief, and I'm sure they've got a new name idea possibility for the first child, perhaps, in that in that police officer. Oh, what a fabulous story! And you know, and you were talking about the celebration of the Republic as well, as the little boy in me always loves to see jets fly over, and so that I've seen pictures of that too, is so cool. Hey, and one other feast day for the church being celebrated pretty well in Rome this Friday too.
Indeed. The 2nd of June, on Friday, we'll celebrate the Feast of Saints Marcellinus and Peter. And those names, of course, sound very familiar to us because the mention of their names is optional in the Eucharistic Prayer 1. Now, these two men lived and died under the reign of Emperor Diocletian. St. Marcellinus was a priest. St. Peter was an exorcist. They were each martyred for their faith. And to give you a little background of the times in which they lived, from 303 to 304 AD, Diocletian made four edicts specifically against Christians. And the first was that all sacred books should be destroyed, that meetings of Christians were forbidden, masses could not be held. The second edict said that all representatives of the church, bishops, priests, deacons, exorcists, they had to be imprisoned. And it got to the point where the prisons were so full, they couldn't even old people who broke civil laws. Then the third edict, promoted the death penalty for anyone who did not honor the pagan gods. So Indeed, these two men were imprisoned. Their jailer taunted them. They said, if your God is so powerful, why don't you free yourselves? Well, you can guess what happened. The next day, they were miraculously freed from prison. The jailer, along with his entire family, converted to Christianity. And so after that, they were arrested again. They were brought to a secret location in the woods so that others couldn't come venerate their remains. And there they were beheaded there. But through the grace of God, that executioner converted and eventually led, he and another woman went and took their bodies and buried them in a place we now know as the catacombs of St. Marcellinus and Peter. So on this day, on Friday, people will go visit those catacombs. They will honor the place that their bodies once were, and they will also visit the church of St. Marcellinus and Peter, where a relic is placed there under the main altar. And that church really knows how to celebrate because they're having a full week of pilgrimages. They're having special masses throughout the city, and they're having an outdoor food and sweets festival. But the finale on the last day is that they're having a dance just for little kids. It's a kids-only dance, and I think it's so cute. So we ask especially for the prayers of Saints Marcellinus and Peter so that we can all have that same kind of love for the gospel in all that we do, Glenn.
Oh, nothing cuter than watching little kids dance. Oh, hey, Ashley, thank you so much for your great enthusiasm for the faith and for the beautiful city of Rome and the ability to, you know, roll those R's as well. You do such a good That's job right. with the language. We appreciate it always. Thank you so much. Look forward to another chat every Wednesday morning, Lord willing. We hook up with Ashley Nerona live from Rome here on Relevant Radio. Thanks, Ashley. Morning Air continues. New Story Corner on the way before the hour is through, and we'll talk next about wading into the culture wars, as we do so often these days as Catholics, but doing it with love. Angela Erickson joins us as Morning Air continues next here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Morning Air continues here. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John today. Story Corner coming up in just a little bit. And we'll talk about the visitation and about holy friendships coming up with Father Marcel Tyone after the top of the hour. Hopefully you can stick around for that as well. Sarah, when it comes to kind of sharing truth and goodness, you know, we're supposed to speak the truth in love. And sometimes that can maybe come out when we're talking to our little tiniest loved ones, our kids, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, they need to hear a lot of love. But sometimes, you know, it can be very frustrating to try to explain things to them because, you know, there's a little bit of a barrier. Sometimes, depending on the age of the child, I've noticed with when they're really little and you're saying, this is how you put on your shoe. And they're saying, no, this is how you put on your shoe. And it's clearly not the right way. And so it's hard to sometimes take a step back and say, yep, no, we got to do this with more love because I'm really frustrated. So is this kid. So, yeah, you need to take sometimes you need a little help there.
There they go, those Tafoya kids at the children's dance in Rome this weekend with shoes on the wrong feet. But they're well-loved, though. They're well-loved. Oh, hey, Angela Erickson is with us, and she's got a bunch of little kids who are well-loved at home, a homeschooling stay-at-home mom and a longtime pro-life speaker and activist. She's on a Relevant radio station in the Twin Cities with a pro-life show along with Brian Gibson from Pro-Life Action Ministries. Does a lot of writing and video blogging and all of that stuff, and wades regularly into the culture wars and taking a break from the front lines to join us this morning. Angela Erickson from the Twin Cities. Angela, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Glenn. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, always fun to talk with you. Always fun to talk with you. You do a lot, you know, ever since the college days of dealing with Students for Life and, you know, working with LifeSite News and leading pregnancy help centers. You've had to kind of be on the front lines of the culture wars, really dealing with people who aren't necessarily on board with our Catholic and Christian way of thinking. We need to express that that truth and love. What are some of the latest battles you find yourself wading into?
That's a really good question. I think the most obvious right now is just our understanding of sexuality in general, especially with the rise of transgenderism, the promotion of it in ways that are unprecedented. I think that's something that really has to be addressed, as well as the rise in just, you know, the people who say that, for example, maybe they're spiritual but not religious, or altogether antagonistic towards religion. So there are certainly many battles waging right now in this culture of death.
You know, and as we hear more and more about that, first, maybe just a practical question as a mom. I mean, these are subjects that eventually, you know, I mean, they pop up in the news everywhere. Eventually, our kids will be old enough to kind of hear and learn and, you know, think and talk about those things and encourage others in the Christian way to deal with that. But in the meantime, they're kind of too little to be able to do all of that. Do you find it almost a full-time job trying to shield them a little bit just from hearing stuff that, you know, we hadn't learned about or thought about till we're well into adulthood?
Yeah, that's another really good question. I think my answer has a couple of avenues, I guess. For one, we homeschool, so I do think that helps insulate them a little bit. I mean, we're not totally immune because we still go out and engage. I bring my kids to the Capitol, for example, when we go do protest against abortion laws that have been passed here. I brought them to the Capitol several times this legislative session. And so they did see firsthand what was going on, and it did give us a lot of opportunities to talk about why are these people so angry? What is going on here? What are these people fighting for? What are we fighting against? That kind of thing, and learning how to convey those messages in a way that they understand and doesn't totally traumatize them. Takes a little practice, but they do get it, and they like to be engaged. I think it was a great learning experience for them. But in other areas, I think our children mostly learn by example. And so being able to model for them what a healthy marriage looks like in an age where families are so broken, I think is really important. And that's something my husband and I strive for every day. And I do think that in and of itself helps insulate our children from more than we can possibly imagine, because it creates this protective blanket, kind of like Our Lady's mantle over our children, guiding them and protecting them so that they can see love as properly ordered. And hopefully they can emulate that in their own lives as they grow and mature and maybe someday get married themselves.
One of the things in dealing with culture wars is we're trying to hopefully share the good news of Christ and his church with others who maybe at the moment aren't on board with that, and they often will have assumptions about the church, and they'll often lump all things conservative with all things religious and have a kind of prejudged idea of what that's like, and we need to really kind of break through that in order to reach them. Any particular tactics you found that might have worked to kind of, you know, put a little crack in that that shield that they might have, that wall they might automatically have up when talking with a Christian?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best things we can do, there are a few really great tools we have when we're doing apologetics. I don't want to give just one. So here are a few. If you are engaging someone and they disagree with you on any given issue and they're especially antagonistic towards you because of your faith, I think it is wise and prudent to ask them clarification questions in an authentic manner so that you really understand their view and can address it appropriately. But also things like self-depreciating humor go a very long way with people in sort of breaking those walls down and getting them to see that you're not taking them or yourself too seriously. It sort of helps disengage from the animosity and say, we can laugh at ourselves a little bit. We can talk about this rationally. You know, let's talk about this in a more friendly manner. And also, I think you have to be wise about when you engage, your own mental and emotional state, what sort of platform you're using. I think it's generally unwise to engage with people online or on social media unless you know the person, simply because it's really easy to dehumanize people on the other side of the screen in a way that is less, you just can't do that so much when you're face-to-face with somebody. And lastly, know when to disengage. Know when it's okay to step away. It's okay if you disengage, and just always practice charity where you can. Those are the things that I think go a very long way. Finding common ground with people so that they can see you're on their team. You want them to know the truth just as much as you want to be right, right? We don't want to focus on just being right. We want people to know the truth. And so that has to be where our heart is, not in just being right.
Well, that's a great point, I think, too, especially in terms of apologetics, is the idea is to win the soul, not just to win the argument. And we have to be careful how we how we do that and how we bring that. How about in, and sometimes this pops up on both sides of particular discussions around faith things, is that people seem these days so often just to wanting to be spoiling for a fight. They love to fight, and, you know, disagreement kind of becomes a popular sport. I don't know if it, started with TV talk shows featuring the audience members throwing chairs at one another, but it seems like it's almost entertainment for us to watch people argue in a very, very, non-productive way.
I think a lot of that has to do with social media. Maybe perhaps some of these older TV shows where people are throwing chairs might have something to do with that. That might have been the lead up. But really, social media created an environment where your brain has a physiological response to this type of engagement, likes, shares, it releases that dopamine. It makes it very addictive to have a lot of action. And it just has sort of created this environment where people are constantly seeking that sort of, they're seeking those likes and clicks because it's affirming to them and it's very addictive to the brain. So I think for me personally, I think that's the biggest reason we are seeing so much of that. And it's a lot easier, again, when you're hiding behind a screen and you don't have to see that person face to face. You don't have to see how your words are impacting them personally. It's easier to be nasty.
Well, it might be anonymously, but when we think about what's our goal, right? Is our goal to cause a fuss? Is our goal to, help bring others hopefully to heaven with us? And what is that ultimate goal? You've got a lot going on there. We've only got about a minute left this morning, but I wanted to give you a chance to share how you fit all this in while being a busy mom, but also where people can access some of the video and writing that you do.
Thank you so much. I have a podcast called Integrated with Angela Erickson. You can find it on every platform that you like to use, and I'm on YouTube, and I often talk about the ills of feminism and things like that. I've also been published in Crisis Magazine, amongst other places, so you're more than welcome to check me out there or find me on my website, integratedangela.com.
And you can always find Angela along with Brian Gibson on Relevant Radio 1330 in the Twin Cities with Living the Gospel of Life, all the pro-life news of the week and more Saturdays on 1330 in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Angela, greetings to your beautiful family. Thanks for joining us today, and keep up the battle with that good and loving heart as well. There goes Angela Erickson. We continue with Morning Air now here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app with today's Story Corner. Our story today called From Behind Bars to Shooting for the Stars. It's from Sunny Skies. A young Texas woman whose life began behind bars has been accepted into Harvard University after graduating third in her class. 18-year-old Aurora Sky Kastner was born in the Galveston County Jail. Her father picked her up from jail and raised her as a single dad. Her mother was incarcerated at the time and has not been a part of her life. "I was born in prison," reads the first line of her Harvard application letter. Kastner credits her mentor, Mona Hamby, for her success. Kastner and Hamby met when she was in elementary school. The school staff introduced her to a community mentorship program where adult volunteers grab lunch with young students at least once a week. "I was given a paper about her. Her hero was Rosa Parks. Her favorite food, tacos from Dairy Queen, and she loved to read. I thought, this sounds like a bright little girl," said Hamby as she spoke to the Houston Chronicle. "I still have that paper today. She told me, 'I've been to jail.' I said, 'Oh, that can't be right.' And I knew that I just can't go to eat lunch with this kid once a week. She needed more." Hamby became a major part of Kastner's life since that day. She took her to her first haircut at a salon, helped her get glasses, and was there when she toured Harvard. Kastner not only succeeded in getting accepted into Harvard, she'll also be attending the Ivy League school on a full scholarship. Girl set a goal to go to Harvard in elementary school despite being born in poverty, received a full scholarship to attend Harvard in 2023. That's from Hamby writing in a recent Facebook post. Others in the community stepped up and looked out for the teen as well, from helping her to get dental care to gifting her the experience of summer camp. Kastner said she's beyond excited to be attending Harvard in the fall with her sights set on a future law degree. Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." That's our story for the day. Feel free to listen again or share that if you like in podcast form. The Story Corner available each and every day on the Relevant Radio app and the Relevant Radio website, relevantradio.com. And we love to hear your story suggestions as well. If it's something that you have written or something you've come across you think others would enjoy, feel free to email that to us here at the morning show. That's morningair@relevantradio.com. Morningair@relevantradio.com. Morning Air continues, coming up right around the corner. We're going to talk about the visitation and the importance of those friendships, those holy friendships. Think about Mary and Elizabeth. With all that was going on, my goodness, Mary found time and energy to go and help her cousin. Oh, we're going to talk about the importance of friendships like that. That and Dave Durand on being a good teammate as we talk success and leadership, all coming up in the next hour as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.